I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a former Tacoma police officer acquitted of murder is going after the state of Washington and Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Yet another example of how Ferguson's political ambitions are costing all of us. Plus, Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal's sister loses her Oregon congressional race, and American Airlines quite simply has lost its damn mind. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. And welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We'll have a little housekeeping to do here after our lead story, but I want to dive right into it. We, of course, are familiar with the three Tacoma police officers who were charged with murder, tried for murder, and acquitted in the 2020 death of Manny Ellis. Now, as is pretty normal for the media ecosystem, particularly around issues related to race and policing, a lot of coverage of the trial, of the accusations, and not so much on the acquittal and what's been happening with some of these officers after the fact. I have already said my piece on this. On two fronts. First of all, of course, police officers need to be held accountable if they break the law. They have a tremendous amount of power. And so when there are examples of them violating policy and violating the law, of course, I have no issue with them being tried for that. But that's not what this is. This was Attorney General Bob Ferguson trying to build even more of a reputation for himself on the coattails of the race and social justice movement by trying three police officers, by politically prosecuting them. He is now 0-for-4 in the political prosecutions of police officers through his office. And that's really what I believe this was. And I think the jury obviously agrees that there just was not evidence to bring these officers to trial. So the last story we did on this, one of the officers, Christopher Burbank, he'd found a new job as a Thurston County Sheriff's Deputy, and then some members of the community got mad about it, so he kind of felt pressured to resign from that position. Now we're hearing from another one of the officers, Officer Timothy Rankine. And I'm just going to note, going into this, because it's relevant, he's Asian. He's an Asian American, and apparently Asians aren't considered like people of color because everyone painted in the media and the left wing this Manny Ellis as an issue of racism. He was killed because of racism. So Officer Timothy Rankine and his wife, separately but together, are filing claims against not only the city of Tacoma, but also the state of Washington, and specifically the office of Attorney General Bob Ferguson. This from the Seattle Times. So they're planning a defamation suit, but the lead up to a lawsuit is a claim process. That's how it works when you're going after a government agency. It says Joan Mell, an attorney representing Timothy Rankine and his wife, Catherine Chin, filed claims on behalf of the couple in March with the city of Tacoma and Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Rankine is seeking $35 million in damages from the city and the state, and Chin, his wife, is seeking $12 million, according to copies of their filings provided by Joan Mell. Rankine and Chin's filings do not reference specific statements by the city or attorney general or describe the ongoing threats or violence they say they have experienced. So let's dive into exactly what their claims say. So I've kind of lumped them together because, again, they did file separate claims for damages with both the city and the state, but I put their forms on a single page so it's just easier to follow. So let's look at the claim against the city of Tacoma. So this is from Officer Rankine's claim. It says, describe what happened. He said, politically motivated false accusations of racial bias policing and criminal misconduct, creating a hostile work environment, inciting hatred, threats, against me and my family. It says, how was the city of Tacoma involved? He writes, elected officials and employees made false statements to the public in press conferences, meetings, and directives, wrongfully and falsely accused me of criminal misconduct. And when I read that, I thought of the mayor of Tacoma, who came out before any evidence had been heard or before any trial and said these officers needed to lose their job and made it seem and sound like a racial justice issue. It says, describe any damage or injury. The usual and ordinary damages and harm from discrimination and defamation, past and future economic losses, and my reputation, which, again, you know, you look at what happened with Christopher Burbank. Is he going to be able to get a job again? I don't know. Is Timothy Rankine going to be able to continue to work as a police officer? So he's saying the defamation has hurt his reputation and his ability to get another job. His wife said in hers that the city incited hatred and hostilities against she and her husband. Damage to my marriage and personal safety, severe emotional distress. I imagine that she went through some severe and emotional distress. The question is the city at fault for that? And that's what they're going to have to prove. Now, the claim that was filed with the state of Washington is very interesting because it explicitly says, it says state agency or department alleged responsible for damage and injury, Attorney General Bob Ferguson and his staff. So the claim is directly about the alleged conduct of the Attorney General himself. It says, describe the cause of the injury or damages, explain the extent of property loss or medical, physical, or mental injuries. This is from Timothy Rankine. Politically motivated, false accusations of racial bias and criminal misconduct creating a hostile work environment. His wife said, inciting racially motivated hatred toward my husband and his work as a law enforcement officer, disrupting and interfering with our marriage and my ability to live and work safely without fear of retaliation and reprisal, using politically motivated false statements and criminal prosecution of my husband for conduct that was not true. Again, directed at Attorney General Bob Ferguson, the damages they're seeking from the state of Washington to the tune of $35 million. Once again, Bob Ferguson's political posturing, his efforts to further his political career, to set himself up for a run for governor, to capitalize off of anger from Black Americans around policing in this country. He decides to take three officers to trial, lacking any evidence that they violated the existing policies. And that's what's key here. There was no evidence they violated the policies they were allowed to work under and conduct themselves through. And that's why they weren't convicted at trial. But Bob Ferguson wanted a feather in his cap to say, I put three police officers in prison for murder. Elect me governor. And the result is going to fall on all of us. He plays politics, the rest of us pay for it. Time and time and time and time again. I think I'm going after the, gosh, what was it, Nicole? The
wedding cake? The wedding cake?
Not the wedding cake. The one, it's not Goodwill, it's Value Village.
Oh, Value Village.
Going after Value Village. And what does it do? It cost us millions of dollars when he lost that case. So, I mean, you know, losing cases as the Attorney General, that's part of the job. You're not going to win every single time. But what happened in the Value Village case, when he tried to say that they were misrepresenting themselves, essentially, as a charity, that the judge says, hey, by the way this stuff is supposed to work, you were supposed to go to them first and just say, look, we don't think that you're operating the way you should. You know, do you want to fix it? Bypassed that. Why go and just be reasonable? Bypass that. Let's file a big fat lawsuit against them so that I can put out another press release saying, look what I'm doing for the state of Washington. Hell, maybe I'll even send some letters out, you know, some chicken checks out to people in an election year. Ruin people's lives, ruin their wives' lives, put them on trial for murder. One of the worst things you can do to a human being is threaten their life and liberty. And yeah, I mean, if I were Timothy Rankine's wife, I would absolutely be suing as well. And you might recall the name of their attorney, Joan Mell. It would be familiar to you because we've had Joan on the show before. She was representing the Washington Coalition for Open Government in public records cases. And she said on the show, you know, she really isn't a fan of Bob Ferguson because of the way that he operates politically and the fact that he hides stuff from people, that he just operates in a way that she doesn't find to be honest. And so to see her name on this, I thought that's a good attorney to choose. And so we've reached out to Joan to see if not only Joan, but if she'll bring her client, Timothy Rankine, on the show to talk about what's going on. So I thought I'd give you guys an update on that. We'll see how the media spins this one. Okay, on the show lately, we have really, really, really been not only diving into, but encouraging everyone to speak up about this issue of biological boys participating in girl sports. because it's one of those things that, you know, the mainstream media doesn't want to have these conversations. Oh, God forbid you bring up something about it online and you're just absolutely vilified, like J.K. Rowling went from this adored author of Harry Potter and now the left hates her because they call her anti-trans. And so, you know, it's a scary thing to speak up about. I get it. But you look at what it's doing to our kids, you know, in so many different ways. This is just one element of the gender identity obsession story, is the athletic element of it. And whether it's in high school sports or junior high sports or collegiate sports, it's one of these things that just doesn't make sense. It's not political. It's not. This isn't about hating trans people. It's about biology. And it's about the fact that young girls, women, young girls are not built like young boys, and women are not built like men. And they shouldn't, women shouldn't be forced, females shouldn't be forced to compete against biological men. You can call me whatever you want. I don't care. That is just a really stupid, stupid thing to continue to push and act like there's not a problem there. And so we, gosh, this was a few days ago on the show, we talked about this Junior Olympics track meet that happened in Kashmir. So this is at the junior high level. And our understanding of how it works is essentially the top performers for all the school districts and the regions, they get to come and participate in Junior Olympics. And it's sort of like what, you know, like state for high schoolers. So this is a big deal to these kids. And so there was a young girl, 14 years old, who has been a fantastic athlete. She wins a lot because she works really, really hard. And she took second place in the 1600 meter to a biological boy. And she didn't just lose, she lost by quite a bit. It wasn't close. It was like 7 seconds, which if you ever watch a track race, losing to someone by 7 seconds doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. And she's the best of the best among the girls, but is no competition for competing against a biological boy who's just bigger, faster, stronger. So we shared this story and I just said, what is it going to take? Like, who is going to speak up about these things? Why aren't more people speaking out about it? And then we were happy to hear that that young girl's dad was willing to talk to us. He's going to be our guest coming up this Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers. His name is Brendan. I really got the sense, we actually taped this interview with him this morning, and I really got the sense he's not someone who's used to speaking out. In fact, he looked a little uncomfortable doing so. But he's a dad who is so frustrated for his daughter and for all the other female athletes. And he sees what we see, which is this doesn't make sense. And so he's now willing. You know, we asked, you guys answer. He's willing to speak up, to put his name and his face and his voice out there and stand up for not only his child, but other young women. So we're going to have his full interview on Sundays with Subscribers, but I wanted to just play a clip of it today for you. You mentioned your daughter seems to have kind of taken it in stride, but I have to imagine, you know, she's the best of the best and she still was crushed by 7 seconds. I mean, how old is she?
She's 14 in eighth grade.
I mean, that's gotta just be... I mean,
yeah, I mean, she's been beating herself up about all the things she could have done better. She's like, if I had used this strategy, or if I had trained a little harder in the season, or she's kind of internalized all of this, what if I could have done better, which is the right mindset for an athlete. But she's also just confused about what happened and why did this happen? And I had no idea that this was a possibility that I'd have to compete with a biological male. I mean, she's a competitor, yeah. And she'll do what she needs to do to try to be successful. But yeah, she's definitely been upset about this, about why did this happen?
Yeah. I mean, that just, right in the heart, is dad talking about how his 14-year-old daughter, who works so hard, who does so well, who's a phenomenal athlete, her response to getting beaten by a biological boy was, what could I have done? Could I have trained harder? What could I have done? And that's so sad to me, because I'm sure this is what her parents said to her. You can't do anything except, you know, try to change this. You're the best, one of the best female young track runners in the state of Washington, but you cannot beat a biological boy. And I think it was 10th place that biological boy would have gotten if he'd competed in the same event over on the male side. 10th place. So I just have a lot of admiration for Brandon Wilson and his wife and their willingness to speak out about this, because this photo went crazy viral all over the place. And there was one person who posted it who ended up taking it down because they just didn't want to deal with the hate and the vitriol. It takes a lot to speak up about these things. So Brandon is going to join us. You can hear that whole full conversation this week on Sundays with subscribers. If you want to sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We've been having fantastic conversations like that every single week on the show. I did make this the topic of our daily subscriber show poll today because as we urge people to speak out, who needs to speak out the most? You know, whose voice will actually make a difference to move the needle on these sorts of issues? So that was my daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. Whose voice do you think would make the biggest difference in bringing about change? Parents, female athletes, male athletes, or coaches? Because certainly they all bring a different perspective, and you hate to put it on the kids, right? And be like, you're the ones who have to speak out against what the adults have done. But at the same time, you know, they're the ones who are most directly impacted, particularly for the female athletes. That's the choice a lot of you are making right now, saying female athletes. Megan says, that's a tough one because I feel it should be a collaborative approach. I have a very athletically gifted girl and will die on this hill when she gets a bit older. Why can't we just have three divisions, biological males, biological females, and trans in terms of, and I agree with that. I mean, it's sort of silly because it's like, okay, we're just going to hold, you know, rebuild a whole system around 0.001% of athletes. But it's like, if it's that or let them participate against girls, fine, like do a division. But in some places, it's going to be a division of one. So I don't know. Jeff Roy says female athletes, unfortunately, it is not at all fair to them that they're even being put in this position, and even less fair what they're going to have to do to force a change. The female athletes that are being expected to compete against biological males have to start withdrawing from competitions in protest and give them no one to compete against. Hopefully this will force the regulating bodies to come to their senses and enact rules to address the issue. And my question is, will it? You know, and you have, that's devastating, first of all, like you said, Jeff, to ask these young girls to be the ones to put their, you know, their successes on the line, and all the hard work that they put in to be good at something and to win most of the time. For this young girl, she usually wins. And to say, okay, I'm one of the best and I'm going to stop doing it. That's a tough thing to ask of kids, but I got to agree with you. I mean, I think that makes the biggest impact. Coaches should be speaking out as well. We asked Brendan, you know, did your daughter's coach say anything? And it sounded like the coaches are kind of scared to speak up and they're worried about their jobs. So just insane. E says the adults need to take charge. The coaches are the ones that have direct input to the people in charge of the leagues. Why would anyone think the girls have any power? They are children and no one listens to the kids. Never have, never will. I agree. It's got to be everyone collectively, and even, you know, especially, I think, you know, people who don't have kids in school or don't work for the school district, what are they going to do to us? You know, can't kick my kid out of school. I don't have one. can't fire me. I work for you guys, you know, so it's a tough thing. All right. I have been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, and I get messages all the time from people who have started the program and are seeing fantastic results. I describe it like 60 days of hard work followed by a lifetime of just better lifestyle choices, honestly. And if you can get through 60, I think you can do anything for 60 days if you really put your mind to it. And the thing is, a lot of patients lose 20 to 30 pounds in those first 60 days. I did. I lost almost 30 pounds. So the reward that you're getting for your hard work along the way is the motivation you need, or at least for me it was, to keep going. There's no prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no strenuous workout routines, no drugs or injections. They just teach you what to eat in the right portions and then how to maintain your weight loss for life. So do what I've done and what so many others have done. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, a little bit of housekeeping before we get too deep into the show today. We are not going to have a show tomorrow. I am traveling for a seminar, and we are not going to have a show on Monday because I agreed that Nicole would get a list of vacation days for holidays. And whenever I make Nicole work on a Holiday, you guys are mean to me in the comments. So rightfully I so. Guess that we're not having a show on Monday. However, per the usual, we don't miss Sundays with subscribers. As I told you, we already have a good interview planned for this Sunday. So you won't see us tomorrow. You won't see us on Monday. Subscribers will see us on Sunday. And then Tuesday evening, we're having our monthly subscriber Q&A. So be on the lookout for information about that. Are you happy, Nicole?
Very.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, you don't be mean to me, guys. I gave her the day off. Hear that breath in. I promise I don't smoke. All right. Are some cities finally getting fed up with the forced Pride Month celebrations, declarations? Well, apparently the city of Yakima is. Now, Yakima, it's on the eastern side of Washington State, which is sort of divided blue and red, but it is a major city. And so it certainly isn't a deep red city by any stretch of the imagination. There is some Democratic representation there. So this was really interesting. So last night, there was a regular city council meeting, and they had, you know, a whole list of business. And one of those things was to decide whether to approve an LGBTQ2S+ Pride Month declaration. Here's how that went.
Next is a draft of the Pride Proclamation, Pride Month Proclamation. Have Council had an opportunity to read the proclamation? Mm-hmm. Any questions or concerns?
Why are we honoring this?
It's a proclamation that was submitted to the Council for consideration.
I move to approve the proclamation.
Okay.
Second.
So we have a motion by Councilwoman DeCicco and a second by Councilman Herrera to approve the proclamation. Again, we'll vote by a raise of hands. Those in favor, please say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
To those opposed, please say no.
No.
No. All right, the motion fails 5-2.
No Pride Month in Yakima. And it was just like that, like no discussion, no debate. They're just like, no, it's not happening. Now, I tend to think cities shouldn't get involved in this stuff anyway. I mean, there are tons of Pride Month celebrations. It's not like it ceases to exist in a city if you don't have the city council spend its time and taxpayer resources like putting a Pride Month declaration through. I just thought it was really interesting to watch how, because usually, I mean, you wouldn't see that, I don't think, in Washington State if one's brought forth, but also just how lopsided it was, like 5-2. One of the people who voted in favor of it, you'll actually, Janice DeCicco, you'll remember her because she was the one who called 911 because right-wing signature gatherers were collecting signatures outside of a Walmart. So I'll get into the Yakima Pride's response to this before I sort of get into my own thoughts on it. So Yakima Pride released a press release saying, calling the city council's rejection of Pride Month proclamation a betrayal of Yakima's values. It says, "Dear Yakima City Council members, the recent vote to reject the LGBTQ2S+ Pride Month proclamation is not merely disappointing. It is a blatant disregard for a significant segment of our community. This decision erodes the very foundation of inclusivity this city claims to uphold. The LGBTQ2S+ community is not invisible." Yeah, I agree with that. "We are your teachers, your firefighters, your small business owners. We are woven into the fabric of Yakima, contributing to its growth and vibrancy. Yet by rejecting this proclamation, you've chosen to marginalize us, sending a message that our voices and experience don't matter." So a couple things on that. I don't have to read that whole thing. First of all, in this state, you are not a marginalized community. I just refuse to believe that anymore. I'm sorry. I do. I consider myself an ally. But like, if you need the city of Yakima to vote for a Pride Month declaration in order to not feel invisible, come on. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You should be proud of who you are. Certainly, you're not invisible. I don't think today's society makes you invisible. Quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. And this idea that you need seven random council members to validate who you are, it just seems like it's the antithesis of you know, the pride that you have in your own identity. And they also put out, the Yakima Pride people put out like a name and shame list where they had the pictures and the names of all the council members and saying who voted no and who voted yes, which, I mean, they did that on camera, so it's not really, you know, a secret. But the two who voted, I mentioned Janice DeCicco. So, you know, here's my thing on this. And I'm sitting over here tripping over the LGBTQ2S plus Pride Month thing. I think you're going to start to see more of this. I think you're going to start to see more cities and entities who aren't anti-Pride, who might even participate in Pride festivities, reject stuff like this because they're tired of it constantly being forced on them. They're tired of it taking precedent over other things. And also, it has gotten into this alphabet soup of things that aren't even related to each other. When you look at that, LGBTQ2S, so lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, questioning, is that what it is, or queer? I think it's questioning. And then two spirits. Okay. Those things don't have anything to do with each other. One of them is, you know, a couple of them, lesbian, gay, bisexual. That's a sexuality preference. Transgender, 2S, plus, these are how you identify, like your gender identity, two spirits. What does thinking you have two spirits have to do with being a lesbian? What does being transgender have to do with being gay? They don't. And so I think until, and we've talked about this on the show before, one of my concerns is that all this absolute gender nonsense being talked about and debated in the culture wars is actually going to serve to roll back gay rights. We were looking at a poll, not, I don't remember the context under which we were talking about this study. It was a study on how actually like more Black Protestants and Hispanic Catholics, a higher percentage, are opposed to gay marriage than previously. Like, the support for gay marriage is eroding. And that seems really backward to me, but when I think about it and all these other things that are now being attached to that, you had gay people who fought so hard for equal rights and equal recognition, and then other people saw that success, and they're like, well, let me just glob on to that. You know, the transgender issue, the two spirits, the furries, whatever it is, they're like, well, now you have to accept me too. You accepted the gay people. Well, now you have to accept that I want to dress like a cat and I want to, you know, go to a park and hop around. I'm like, no, you know, we're just, I'm not. And then on the transgender issue, there's such a big difference between, you know, respecting and appreciating an adult's, you know, decision to be transgender and to live their life in that way. And then, you know, this sort of forced transgender craze on kids and what's happening there. And so, no, I'm just not willing to lump that into, you know, Pride Month. I'm not willing to do it anymore. And to be like, okay, in order to celebrate and respect gay people, we have to, the whole laundry list of things has to be added to it. So the city of Yakima's like, no, the guy, I have to like love the kind of older guy who's like, why are we honoring this? It's like, I'm sort of like, you know, I don't know. So, you know, I'm an ally. And I for my friends who've you know, fought to sort of be themselves and have the right to marry who they love and all of that, I would hate to see those gains lost because we couldn't just stand up and say, no, two spirits. No, you can't glob on, you know, no furries. You can't attach to us. Like, it's time to put our foot down. And until there's a clear delineation between LGB and the rest, I think we're going to continue to see this happening. I don't know what two spirits is. I think I know. Yeah. I think it's like, and did you figure out, is the G, or is the Q questioning or queer? I think questioning, because queer would be just redundant.
Two-spirit people are male. Oh, Native American two-spirit people are male, female, and sometimes intersexed individuals.
In their mind, right?
With traits unique to their status. Yeah.
Okay. What, the Q, somebody tell me what the Q is. I'm exhausted.
It's queer or questioning.
Okay, gotcha. All right, I think it was going to be questioning. Anyway, okay, moving on from that. Speaking of the Yakima area, I'm going to try to segue into this. So the grand opening phase two has been extended for Natchez RV Resort. I heard some undivided subscribers now own one of the lots at Natchez RV Resort. So that's exciting. They went over there during the grand opening weekend. Invite us, okay? Invite us. So the grand opening pricing is still going to be in place this weekend at Natchez RV Resort. We're told there are still a couple lots left. In fact, Tig is going to actually be out there this weekend taking reservations, and I'm going to be stopping by on Sunday. I hope my husband's not listening to this right now because he doesn't know yet. But on Sunday, I'm going to be stopping by because I actually really want to see the resort because everything online looks amazing. I mean, the place has everything you could ever want. It's a luxury RV resort, 4,300 square foot clubhouse, pool and spa coming soon, endless trails, wine tasting nearby. I mean, honestly, this place really is a luxury destination, whether you want to be out there full time or head over on the weekends. And Tig says there's a lot of people who I think would... let's just say be pleasant neighbors if you decide to buy a lot.
It's an awesome group of people. I can't say better things. It's all very like-minded people. I'm sure a lot of them listen to your show. A lot of people still living and working over here in the greater Seattle area that just want that home base to go to, and they want quality. They want to keep it a resort and not just have it be a park. And it's very tough these days with RVers for them to find a place to go, especially a quality spot. This is one they own. They can treat it like a second home, have their big RV sitting over there. If they get off work on a Friday and feel like just shooting over there, they know it's an option. They can also, when they're not using the lot, we have a great rental program where we can put it into the rental pool and they can rent it back out all weekend to the general public and have them bring some money coming in for them when they're not using it.
Yeah, so phase one sold out quickly, and this weekend they're going to do an extended grand opening pricing on phase two. Lots from just $79,900. Reservations do fill up fast, so reserve now, 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, NatchezRVResort.com. All right, it is official. Something I think a lot of us suspected was happening but was being hidden from parents and from the taxpaying public is the fact that the Seattle Public School District is offering gender-affirming hormone therapy to students behind the scenes. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so this is an exclusive from the Daily Wire. And again, I think, you know, what we know about the policies and the state laws around mature minors and allowing kids to make certain kinds of medical care decisions for themselves. The law 5599 that says, hey, kids, if your parents won't let you get gender hormone therapy, you can run away from home and we'll put you up at a shelter somewhere. So it's really not a surprise to me to hear that there is now official confirmation that the health centers that are being run via the Seattle Public School District are offering gender affirming hormone therapy to students. But because now it's sort of, you've got the black and white evidence of it, I want to talk about it today. So again, from the Daily Wire, it says emails obtained by the Daily Wire reveal that Neighbor Care Health, a healthcare organization that runs clinics in middle and elementary schools in the Seattle Public School District, announced in January 2023 that hormone treatments were now included in the gender-affirming care it could offer. The Neighbor Care Health team wanted to share an exciting new update to our school-based healthcare services, the email from a program manager, which was obtained by the group Parents Defending Education through a public disclosure request, reads, our program will begin offering comprehensive evidence-based gender-affirming care services to our students and families who need them. So this is an internal email sent within the health center program that was obtained by this parents group. According to the Daily Wire, the change meant that the group could now give hormone treatments to children. Quote, again from this letter, while our school-based health centers have long offered a continuum of gender-affirming care services, including supportive student counseling, promotion of social identity, and health education, this step will allow us to begin offering families across our access to important medical interventions, including hormone treatments. A couple of things about that before I keep reading. The word choice is horrifying here. So it says, while our school-based health centers have long offered a continuum of gender-affirming care services, including supportive student counseling, promotion of social identity, which sounds to me like, that, you know, similar to what Tamara Pitsky told us, who, you know, was a therapist at MultiCare who lost her job for being a whistleblower, where she was just told, just affirm their gender, affirm what they want, affirm what they want, send them on their way to the gender clinic. That sounds like what this is. Kid comes, maybe they have some underlying issues, maybe they're depressed, whatever it is. No, if they think that they might be a two-spirit or whatever it is, just promote their identity. And then it says, the step allows us to begin offering families access to important medical interventions, including hormone treatments, medical interventions, and begin offering families access. Let's be real about what this is going to do. It's going to give kids access to certain kinds of care that their parents don't want them to have. That's what it's going to do. Now, you can't, in the state of Washington, as a minor, get gender transition surgery without parental consent unless you are determined to be a mature minor. Then you can do that from the ages of 13 to 18 without parental consent. So are they going to be allowed at these clinics run through the school? Are they going to have the authority under the law to determine that someone's a mature minor and let a middle schooler who comes into one of their clinics make the argument that they're a mature minor and they should be able to get access to whatever sort of gender therapy that they want? Because we already know the school district is highly ideological on these issues. So now you have a health clinic that's in certain elementary and middle schools in the school district, and they're going to try to get away with whatever they can on this front. And this is really scary stuff. So the Daily Wire goes on to say, NeighborCare, which runs 14 different school-based clinics in Seattle Public Schools and Vashon Island School District, states that their mission is to, quote, help students do better in school by working to address health concerns, prevent serious illness, and promote a healthy lifestyle. Well, that sounds nice. I don't have any issue with that. Wow, you know, that's what it says on their website. Help students do better in school by working to address health concerns, prevent serious illness, promote healthy lifestyles. That sounds like fine. That's like PE promotes a healthy lifestyle. Like, that's all you're going to do. No big deal. The issue is what they don't say on their website is that they provide these so-called gender-affirming care. That's not what they're advertising themselves as. That, in fact, is conspicuously absent from its list of services offered, according to the Daily Wire. So you go to the services offered through this clinic, none of that is listed there. None of that is listed there, despite the fact that in this internal email they got a hold of, it says we're going to start offering these services. That was a year ago. And still a year later, it's not listed publicly as the services that they offer. Instead, they're just there to work on health concerns, prevent serious illness, and promote a healthy lifestyle. They're hiding it because they know it's ridiculous. It says the change meant the group could now give hormone treatments to children. It explained, quote, while our school-based health centers have long offered a continuum of gender-affirming care services, including, oh, we already read that, the offerings mark one of the boldest efforts to create what Manhattan Institute fellow Leo Saper has dubbed the school-to-clinic pipeline, where young school children are encouraged to undergo irreversible medical interventions that seek to change their sex. So the concern here being that, you know, I think a lot of these kids are being indoctrinated in schools, right? You have this secret environment that our policies at the state level allow for. You're not allowed to, remember, via OSPI. OSPI and the policies that are pushed down is they consider a child's gender identity to be protected health information. So schools actually tell teachers and staff you have to hide that from the parents. That's protected health information. We can handle it. They can tell us anything here at the school, but parents can't be trusted to deal with that kind of information. So let's just hide what's going on with their kids mentally and emotionally from them. And then the kid doesn't even have to go through their parents to try to find a doctor, because most 14-year-olds, I'm sorry, if they want some sort of care, like, usually they got to talk to their parents about it, and their parents can book a doctor's appointment and all that stuff. But man, if they don't even have to leave school for it, they just go to their counselor, who can't tell the parents what's going on, and the counselor sends them to the health clinic, and the health clinic, which is hiding publicly the extent to which it offers gender-affirming care services, can dub the kid a mature minor, and then they can help the kid get whatever kind of treatment they want. And the parents are left completely in the dark. It is truly, truly unbelievable how evil that is. How insane that is. The extent to which our government is separating parents from these important medical decisions in their child's life that would have profound impacts on them for the rest of their time. And I would ask Seattle Public Schools, okay, why don't we set up a tattoo parlor in the school districts? Why don't we set up a piercing station in the school, right? Because, I mean, in this day, you know, if you're helping kids make decisions without their parents, like, why not a tattoo? Why not set up a tattoo parlor right in their first period class? And hey, kids, come on in. Mark your body for life. Because we're okay hiding this other stuff from parents and helping facilitate that other stuff away from parents. So let's just do it. Throw in a tattoo parlor. Throw in ear piercings. Whatever it is. Parents don't need to know. All right, we're going to get to some national news coming up next, including election night in Oregon last night. Have Oregon voters been red-pilled? Maybe just a little bit? Because they made some really good choices. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point in 2024, make sure you reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He's been doing this for a real long time. He's been through all the ups and downs in the market, and he is really good at knowing, based on the neighborhood that you're in, what it's going to take to get top dollar for your home. Bryce and Carla, who are fans of Undivided, they decided when they were going to sell their home in Bellevue, retire to Florida, to reach out to Wes Jones.
His attention to detail, he was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that.
Yeah, Bryce and Carla were able to sell their home in just 7 days over list price in January, even with the rates the way that they were. So reach out to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and talk to our friend Wes Jones. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, I don't know if you knew this, but let's dip outside of Washington State. Not too far today, though. We're just going to go down to Oregon. They had a primary election last night. And if you hadn't heard already, I'd seen videos of it everywhere, but Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington, her sister was running in Oregon for the 3rd congressional district there. Her name is Shashila Jayapal. And of course, and I do not fault Congresswoman Jayapal for this, if my sister was running for Congress, hell yeah, I'd be out there knocking on doors for her, campaigning for her, celebrating her, doing whatever it takes. Sisterly love, all for it, love it. Here's a video that Congresswoman Jayapal put out with her sister down in Oregon on the campaign trail.
So we're out canvassing on this rainy Portland Sunday. I am here with the incredible Representative Pramila Jayapal from Washington State, campaigning for our congressional district right here in Oregon's 3rd. And I'm Sushila Jayapal, by the way.
And I am Pramila Jayapal, and I am so excited that Oregon's 3rd congressional district is going to have a chance to elect a real champion, my sister, Sushila Jayapal. And it's really urgent, folks, because there's a lot of people out there that are putting in big, dark money, over $2 million, trying to buy this race. You know why? Because they're afraid of double good trouble. When we get to Congress, we are going to
but
fight.
We are not afraid.
Oh, yeah. We're not, afraid. Not afraid. And when she's there with me, we're going to continue the fight for bold, progressive change.
Well, thankfully, that's not going to happen because she lost last night. What is big, dark money? Because, like, what is just a lot of dark money? What is dark money, you know? What's interesting about this, well, so they have, it seems, and from what I've read and seen, pretty similar politics. So I think it is a good thing that we're not going to have two Jayapals with the same politics in D.C., because I do believe Pramila Jayapal is fairly fringe. And so I'm not sure we needed that kind of double trouble. So that's very good. But this is a very blue congressional district in Oregon that rejected her in favor of a more moderate Democrat. Congresswoman Jayapal, Pramila Jayapal, put out after her sister lost last night, "I'm so, so proud of my incredible sister, Shashila Jayapal. This wasn't the result our family was hoping for, but I know Shashila put everything on the line and ran a proudly progressive campaign rooted in people power." Oh, that's fine. Like, again, like, support your sister, all that stuff. Now, here's where it gets into the kind of victim. "As women of color, as immigrants, my sister and I were taught to never give up, to rise again, and get right back to work, making the world a better place. I'm more motivated than ever to strengthen our democracy and fix our deeply broken campaign finance system. It's disturbing that dark money super PACs funded by GOP mega donors flooded this Democratic primary with millions of outside spending. For the good of our democracy, our movement, and our party, we need to get big money out of politics. I'm ready to double down on this mission." It's so interesting that for Democrats, whenever something hurts them, it's like anti-democratic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like whenever something doesn't go their way, democracy is under attack. You just see that. Maybe though, just maybe, like I'm just going to throw this out there, take it or leave it. Shashila, Pramila, maybe even in Oregon's 3rd congressional district, people are just tired of your brand of progressive politics. And that would be, I think, evidenced by the fact that they made similar decisions in other races, including in the race for the district attorney in the Portland area. So you might have heard of a man named Mike Schmidt. Mike Schmidt is like a Soros-backed, uber-progressive, soft-on-crime DA. And he's now going to lose his job after last night's election. So, you know, the Congresswoman Jayapal's sister, very progressive, losing in a blue district, that's not a one-off. So this is from Andy Ngo, independent journalist who covers Portland issues quite a bit. It was funny because he posted a picture of Mike Schmidt at his election night party, which he noted ended early. And Mike Schmidt is just sort of looking down, dejected and sad. Andy Ngo said, "The Schmidt show is over," because that's what his opponents had started to call it, a Schmidt show. Get it? Get it?
Got it.
Says voters in the Portland, Oregon area have fired Antifa favorite DA Mike Schmidt. Schmidt was voted out in a disgraceful landslide defeat despite having huge cash injections of Soros money and winning over 76% of the vote in 2020. Think about that. 76% of the vote in 2020. 4 years later, lost his freaking job. Mm-hmm. And he says his bloody and ignominious legacy includes record homicides, record shootings, record riots, and record fentanyl deaths. And right now, and I was looking at the latest results. I want to just, 56% to 44%. So who is the guy who's beating him? Well, his name is Nathan Vasquez. He's a former Republican, but I don't know if that's like former Republican, so I can run in a blue area and be able to win. This is from the New York Post. Far left Portland DA Mike Schmidt on track for defeat to tough on crime former Republican. Says voters in Oregon were on the brink Wednesday of ousting progressive Portland DA Mike Schmidt and replacing him with one of his deputies who was once a Republican and has vowed to crack down on rampant crime and drug abuse. And then it talks about the results as of Wednesday morning. And I just looked at the updated numbers. It's still a significant lead. And what Vasquez said is, quote, "I am committed to fulfilling those campaign promises. I'm committed to ending the open air drug use, to ending the open air drug dealing that we have suffered from as a community. I am also committed to restoring the idea that it is okay to hold people accountable and do it in a compassionate manner." That's what people want. That's what most normal people want. Yes, they want care and compassion for those who are suffering with addiction and mental illness, but they're also okay with accountability. And they realize that accountability is part of what allows us to live in a civil society. So when you look at what happened in Oregon last night, I really hope that's an indicator of where our state is heading to, a little bit of a rebound from the crazy. When you have a DA who, you know, didn't do anything when Antifa was tearing Portland apart, who's let the crime crisis and the homeless crisis and the drug crisis get out of control, who won with 76% in 2020 and who is losing big time 4 years later, that's a message. When you have someone with the name recognition of Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal out stumping for her sister for a congressional seat, and she loses in a very blue district, that sends a message that even some progressive voters don't see what's happening as progress. All right, one more national story for you here. We're going a little long on the show today because we're not going to be here tomorrow. So, American Airlines, what is wrong with you? You know, there's often this pushback against airlines for X, Y, Z, things that happen, and there's usually outrage like, "I'm never going to take Delta again," or whatever it is, and I never really care. I'm like, I'll just take whatever's cheapest, as long as it's not Spirit, you know? But this one,
on Spirit.
Have you ever flown a Spirit flight?
I have.
That's not an option.
I know.
It doesn't matter if it's free. I'm not getting on a Spirit plane.
It is definitely not an option for Brandy.
Absolutely not. But now I'm really thinking American Airlines, this might be the first time I boycott an airline over something. So you'll remember the story of this creepy flight attendant who taped his cell phone to the back of the airplane toilet with the camera pointing forward to be able to get creepy videos and pictures. His name is Estes Carter Thompson III. Interesting last name there. Arrested in January for allegedly trying to film minors as they use the plane's bathroom. He was caught after a 14-year-old passenger who was flying from Charlotte to Boston used the bathroom and saw the iPhone, which was pretty obvious, but it was there and it was covered over by some tape. So this is the original. I want to get into how American Airlines has responded to this, because this is the real insanity here. So obviously, you know, the victims sue over this. Like, yeah, your flight attendant put his iPhone on a toilet seat to get pictures of underage girls. Like, yeah. So this is what caused a bunch of backlash yesterday to American Airlines. Own fault and negligence. Airline blames 9-year-old girl for being secretly recorded in bathroom. This is from the Daily Caller. After being sued by the family of a 9-year-old girl who was secretly recorded in the plane's bathroom by a flight attendant, American Airlines is blaming the child for the incident, according to new court filings. New filings from the airline show the company's lawyers recently arguing that the 9-year-old, who is not identified, allegedly knew or should have known the comprised laboratory contained, quote, a visible and illuminated recording device. It says, quote, the defendant, so American Airlines, would show that any injuries or illness alleged to have been sustained by the plaintiff were caused by the plaintiff's own fault and negligence. Oh my God. Oh my God. So American Airlines' argument in court filings is the 9-year-old should have known there was a phone there. It was really obvious, right? It was taped right there. So if she proceeded to go to the bathroom and was captured on the cell phone video from the cell phone put there by our employee, then that's on her, right? I mean, that's her own fault and negligence. How dumb can the 9-year-old be not to see a cell phone there? That is American Airlines' argument in court documents. As you can imagine, that did not go over well with the public when it came out yesterday, first reported in the Boston Herald. So they did an abrupt about face overnight, as one would expect, and went in and edited those court filings. Here's the follow-up from the Herald. After American Airlines blamed a 9-year-old girl for being secretly filmed, the airline has called the court filing an error. It says, following, quote, intense media and public backlash for that defense on Tuesday, American Airlines a day later said it was amending the court filing. Quote, our outside legal counsel retained with our insurance company made an error in this filing, the airline said in a statement. The included defense is not representative of our airline, and we have directed it to be amended. We do not believe this child is at fault, and we take the allegations involving a former team member very seriously. Our core mission is to care for people. And the foundation of that is the safety and security of our customers and team. This was an error. Oops. Oops, we blamed a 9-year-old girl for the fact that she was filmed by a cell phone attached to a toilet seat. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. All right, coming up next, we'll get to Florida Report first. Take the First Mark Challenge, you guys. Man, I'm a member of the First Mark family, Mike and I personally. The Undivided Podcast is insured through the First Mark, through First Mark and the First Mark family, and that's because their service is second to none. And what you get through the First Mark Challenge, honestly, it's such a learning experience, and you leave it knowing that you are going to have or already have the insurance you need. You don't have insurance you don't need, and that you're getting the best possible price. I've heard so many good things from so many of our undivided viewers and listeners. Jackie says, I wanted to let you know I did the First Mark Challenge. It was wonderful. My insurance is where it needs to be. They answered all the questions I had that helped me make the right decisions in my car insurance swap. If anyone is on the fence about trying First Mark, I hope they do it because it's really helpful and they might learn something they weren't aware of. Gosh, Casey in Covington said he saved 37% off his auto quote. So do the First Mark Challenge. If you're in this environment, the insurance industry is crazy right now. They're dropping people left and right for small claims. So if you don't have an insurance broker on your side, like First Mark, a local company that's been doing this for a long time, you got to navigate that disaster yourself. And so do what I've done, so many others have done. Take the First Mark Challenge today. The very best part is you never pay them anything. You don't pay Firstmark a dime, and they work for you, not the insurance companies. You can be assured that they have your best interests in mind. All right. It's not Thursday, but it is Wednesday, and I can't give Miranda a day off, so we're going to do Florida Report a day early.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hello, Miranda. Wednesday this week. You get the day off tomorrow, which means you don't get the day off today.
Yeah, I don't know if that really constitutes as a day off, but yeah, sure.
It doesn't. But, you know, whatever. You can have a long weekend, you know? Yeah. All right. Don't worry. Nicole doesn't get the day off tomorrow either. I don't know if she knows that yet, but I have things for her to do. We'll figure it out. Oh, she's looking at me right now. Don't look at me, Nicole. Look at her smiling over there. Okay. Let's start with this bizarre issue at the Miami International Airport. I've been there many times. I've never gotten a personal tour of sensitive areas of the airport, but apparently if you're a member of the Cuban Communist Party, they'll just invite you right in.
Yeah, I have no idea how or why this is even a thing, giving officials from foreign countries, let alone ones that are known for like being communists and whatever, tours of sensitive areas of the airport. So on Monday, apparently members of the Cuban government were able to get tours of areas like some TSA checkpoints and baggage screening areas, the baggage claim areas, amongst other parts of the airport on a 5-hour tour.
Yeah, the Cuban delegation, so the TSA hosted them, and members of Congress are demanding to know what happened. Like, why would you do that? These areas are designed to help prevent terror attacks, and you're basically showing them how we do that. TSA said in a statement, TSA hosts government officials and members of the aviation community at U.S. airports to foster a strong global aviation security posture. U.S. and Cuban authorities jointly manage the airspace between Cuba and the United States and ensure the safety and security of travelers using our airports. Okay. But still, I don't know what that has to do with taking them behind the scenes and showing them secure areas of the airport.
Discussing it like at a round table so that everybody's on the same page is one thing, but allowing people to physically walk through, tour, and view some of the most like secure areas to me that should only be like viewed by the people who are like dedicated to working in the airport and securing those areas.
Background
and apparently
checks,
this isn't the only time that they've been, toured certain sensitive areas of our country's outer defenses in a way. They went on a tour, I think last year or a year before, of Coast Guard like areas in Miami. And then also like somewhere up in North Carolina, they were also at a military base taking tours of things too. So I just don't really, and they also this year when they did it was on Monday, which is the International Independence Day for Cuba. Yeah. So I don't know, insult to injury.
I'm sure they took a lot of pictures and stashed those away. All right, so we had the Don't Say Gay bill, allegedly, in California, and now the media is dubbing a new bill the Don't Say Climate Change bill, and a local meteorologist is going off on Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, he is, and not for nothing. It is extremely hot here, so I can imagine that for a meteorologist, it's kind of like, all right, it's really hot. It's the hottest year we've had on record in like 100-some years. And now we can't say climate change, but that's not really what this bill was kind of designed to do. I think Florida's been very dedicated and maybe not preventing future climate change, but we have a lot of issues with climate change at hand right now. So they're busy spending time, resources, and money on raising roads because they're already flooding and preventing like communities from being affected by stronger storms, stronger floods, and whatnot. And I think a lot of this new bill is kind of designed to kind of stray away from this conversation of the future so that Florida can focus on what we're dealing with today. Whether that's from global warming, climate change, it doesn't matter. He still has to make decisions based on what's happening here
in Florida. Well, and I think to take some of the ideology out of it, right? Because climate change, you know, can be this whole big talking point. And what are you actually doing? And you've had segments on the show before with what Ron DeSantis is doing from an environmental perspective. And he's actually respected by a lot of Democrats for his work in that regard. So what this says is, and this is from The Hill, the bill removes the requirement for the state to consider climate change when creating creating energy policy, and it rolls back references to climate change in state law. To me, I just see it as stripping the ideology. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't talk about it, but it's not going to drive every single decision that you make on environmental policy and as it says here, energy policy.
Please keep in mind, the most powerful climate change solution is the one you already have in the palm of your hands, the right to vote. And we will never tell you who to vote for, but we will tell you this. We implore you to please do your research and know that there are candidates that believe in climate change and that there are solutions and there are candidates that don't.
Are you familiar with the meteorologist down there?
I'm not familiar with them. The most accurate meteorologist in Florida is when you look at the sky and see if it's sunny or raining in the moment, because it changes so much. So I don't really watch the news for weather down here.
And I've watched the news down there, and their meteorologists, the females, boobs, short skirts. I was like, oh my God, it's a totally different, never would it be allowed in Seattle. It's interesting how different cities have different, like, you know, looks. And there it's like plastic, you know, boobs to high heaven. And I'm just like, and then they turn, you know, like, so they're pointing at the weather screen, but they've got like their butt, you know, pushed out a little bit, like, you know, and I'm like, okay,
we see
what you're doing there. We see. All right, one more, just because it's a crazy video. If you're going to steal a car, I mean, going to a car dealership to test drive one, I guess, is creative.
Yeah, you might as well take a brand new one, or at least a slightly used one if you're going to take one. But yeah, so a Florida woman went in to test drive a vehicle with probably every intention of stealing it shortly after. So as soon as the salesperson got out of the car, when they got back from their test drive, she took off with it, led Florida Highway Patrol on a little bit of a chase. And then I guess she kind of got to the end of her road and decided to just jump into a canal and try to swim away from them in the middle of the city.
Too fun. Well, at least Florida Highway Patrol can pursue criminals. That's nice. You know, I think they would have just let her drive away with it here. And you were saying that actually the canal that she jumped into, so it has this fountain in the canal, and you're very familiar with it.
I am. This is it's like a kind of like a canal, but it's more like a lake, like a man-made lake with a fountain. And that was my view from the hospital for like a week when I was awake recovering. So when I saw the footage of this, I was like, hey, I know exactly where that's at.
Did you ever think while you were sitting there about, you know, stealing a car and jumping into it?
No, I didn't. But I did watch a lot of traffic. And I can imagine that if I was on a police chase and I hit the traffic that that road is notorious for, maybe I would probably jump in that canal and try to get away.
She's lucky a gator didn't get her. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Have a good long weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Wow, that meteorologist, that's crazy. Well, I'm not telling you how to vote, except, you know, don't vote for Ron DeSantis.
Yeah,
how do you get away with that? I mean, even as biased as the media is, a lot of it is like low-key bias. That's just
blatant.
Coming out and saying, don't vote for Ron DeSantis.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts. I mean, how do you not get fired for that? Unless they told him, I imagine they would have had to tell him you can do that. Otherwise, he went off on his own and did it.
Probably because he prefaced with, I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'd never tell you
However, then he called it the don't say climate change. Yeah,
he started that apparently.
Okay. Look, meteorologist, you just stay in your lane. Okay. I don't know. Is that offensive? No offense. No offense to other meteorologists, but I don't need your advice for who to vote for, politically speaking. All right. We had mentioned that Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they're having another one of their live webinars coming up Thursday, May the 30th. This one, however, is going to focus specifically on inflation. So Zach came on the show today to talk about it. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me. Always good to be here.
Yes, we've been talking about the seminar that you have coming up, free for folks if they want to go to knowyourriskradio.com. And this one's particularly about inflation. You say inflation is a silent portfolio killer. Why?
Because I think one of the most pernicious things, and truthfully, one of the reasons it is so pernicious is because we haven't really dealt with it at scale in 40 years. And the reason it'll get you is because, you know, I actually think the last 2.5 years are a perfect example of this. So you kind of have the stock market mania mentality that is still, you know, ever present. And yet, if you take a step back and look at it, the stock market's up about, you know, 9% in the last 2.5 years. And yet at the same time, if we look at the way prices have risen and what our money buys us, it hasn't kept up with that, right? Like, meaning, yeah, we got a little 9% pop in the portfolio over the last 2.5 years, but prices are rising at a 5% annual clip. And so the reason I say it's a silent killer is because people are so used to checking the balance of their 401k. Oh, well, hey, I'm up 10% over the last 2.5 years. Could be worse, and it could. But what's not happening is you're not keep right. The whole idea, if you're, it's sort of like Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe was the best performing stock market in the last 30 years. Yeah, it was up, you know, it had years where it was up 800, 900, 1,000% in a year, huh. Right? Sounds incredible. But not if the prices of everything around you are rising 1,200% a year.
Yeah.
Right? So that's why I say it's a silent killer, because we're used to looking at everything up is good, down is bad. Even if you're going up, are you going up faster than the prices are going up? And if you're not, you're losing money. It doesn't feel like it, but you are. And I think it is going to be a pernicious issue going forward. It was in the 70s in the last bout of inflation that we had. And like I've said before, it not only is it something that we haven't experienced in a very long time, and most investors today that are investing their money have never experienced this, at least when they were investing. But it's, like I said, it's also something that the average portfolio is least prepared for today than at any time in history.
I guess I'm confused what you can do about it, though, because inflation is a thing, obviously, and you anticipate it and you plan for it, you know, when you're saving and you're getting a return and stuff. But at the same time, I'm trying to figure out, because you're already looking to make people as much money as possible, right? So is the only change to combat inflation just saving more?
No, it's understanding the economic impacts of inflation. When you have interest rates at 5.5% like we do today, or the Fed funds rate at 5.5%, and you have inflation running where we do, different companies are going to perform better and perform worse in that environment. For instance, you know, debt really hasn't mattered for the last 15 years because interest rates are zero, right? So you saw a lot of these companies whose stocks were going up and everybody was talking about their revenue growth, and nobody was really paying attention to the debt side of the balance sheet because it doesn't really cost anything. Well, if you've got a company that's relying on the, you know, ever more acquisition of debt, perfect example of this is the private equity market, right? If one of the reasons the private equity market got so big and so robust over the last 15 years was because rates were zero, right? So think about the amount of businesses. If I can borrow money at 2 or 3% to fund a business, there are going to be a lot of businesses that can only work in that environment where the minute rates go to 5 to 6, you're in trouble, mm-hmm. right? So it's knowing what kind of companies to look for, knowing that you probably just can't be spread across an index like has worked so well over the last 15 years, but just understanding the different types of things that work in inflationary environments. It's just completely different, right? Everybody is so used to chasing the levered up tech plays because that's what's worked for 15 years. But all you need to go do is, first of all, most of their growth rates are slowing drastically. Second of all, a lot of them relied on a lot of debt funding to get things done. And that's really going to hit the cash flow side of the cash flow statement.
Yeah. So if you're worried about inflation and how it's going to impact your retirement that you're planning for, especially if you're getting close to retirement, join Zach for his free live webinar Thursday, May 30th at 3:30 p.m. Totally free to sign up. You just go knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. It'll just pop up right when you go to the website and you can sign up there. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Let's get to questions and comments. Old Sub Sailor with a $20 super chat. Leave the frickin' kids alone. Quit filling their heads with this crap and let them be kids. Just stop. Yeah, I agree. I'm assuming referring to the gender ideology BS. A $5 super chat from Matt Gilbert that we apparently missed yesterday about the Seattle Times columnist Naomi Ishaka, I can't say her last name, who wrote about the article about how women would rather go into the woods with a bear because men are dangerous. Matt says, Naomi would choose the bear because it would be the only one to notice her sad trombone sound. Matt, that is mean. Yakima, on them rejecting the Pride Declaration, Deanne Wade said, Indigenous people call gay people two souls.
Well, no, I think that's what, that's what I said.
Oh, no. Oh, okay.
It's the two souls thing. Apparently, that's them saying gay. I guess it's the same thing.
Okay, so maybe the 2S can go with the...
I guess.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
all right. I don't know. Okay. Wasn't trying to offend Native Americans.
That's why we just need one term.
Like let's bifurcate stuff that doesn't have to do with sexuality.
Yeah.
All that goes over here.
Yeah.
Minor attracted person over here. Okay. Right.
I forgot about that.
That's people do all MEPs. It's like trying to normalize it. I don't think a lot of people are, but you see it occasionally brought up and it's like, no, that's not the same thing. Not the same category. Mm-hmm. On the Seattle Public School District offering a bevy of gender services in schools, Debbie says children should not be able to make gender decisions until they're 18, period. Act and dress the part and make the permanent decision when they can make an adult decision. I agree. Krista says, when I was in high school, our rugby team left the country for a tournament in multiple kids got tattoos. The parents threatened to sue the school because of them not stopping it, as I would too. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know, you got to watch the kids if you're out of the country with them. Brett Hammond says, open up a Planned Parenthood in the cafeteria. Why not? We're virtually there already. Might as well.
I mean, we are. Somebody mentioned this in the comments as well, but a few years ago, before the trans stuff was happening, staff member had taken a kid to get an abortion, which that we covered that on Dory's show. There's been some crazy stuff happening in the Seattle school districts for a while, so you can see it escalating. And I hope parents put a stop to it.
You got to before it's just, and then it's back in the other direction. Mary Christie says, parents really have to start looking into alternatives to public school. Keep your kids close. The wolves are out. I agree. It's just so hard. Until we get charter schools approved in Washington State, it's a financial burden for a lot of parents to find an alternative. On American Airlines, being like, 9-year-old girl should have seen the phone on the toilet. Kim Taylor says, wow, way to blame the victim. Carlene Heath, I hate flying altogether. If I was meant to fly, I would have wings. That's cute.
That is funny. Although I will say, if she had seen the camera, she would have seen, I mean, 9-year-olds can read. It says toilet broken, so I would think you wouldn't sit down. So she obviously just went in there. It's a small space.
You're just sort of like,
you're like, oh, let me just go. And the toilet was open and you just sit down.
Insane. That attorney who wrote that should be disbarred.
Absolutely.
On the weatherman in Florida, TZ Burton says, speaking of disbarred, weatherman should be fired. I agree. That's just wild. That's just wild, wild stuff. Okay. Are you ready for my favorite?
I was looking to see if he was, or maybe suspended or something, but
because he tweeted about it too, and I saw the tweet was still up. So I've been in TV news. Yeah. If you do something you're not supposed to do, they're like, take that down.
On the
and
air,
then they'll issue an apology the next day. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Okay. Good questions and comments. Let's get to the world's best sanity check. Buckle up, buttercups, because this video might sound like nails on a chalkboard to you. So allegedly, there is a retreat where women can spend $4,000 to go into the woods, scream as loud as they want, and bash sticks on the ground. It's called a rage ritual retreat. I'm still not convinced that this isn't someone making fun of today's culture, but apparently, until I know otherwise, this is a real retreat that women can pay to go on. It looks and sounds something like this. Now look, that might sound insane, but I too have dreamed about finding somewhere remote and screaming as loud as I possibly could. It's because I do this show, and that would be a really nice way to get the stress out. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Remember, we will not have a show tomorrow. I'm going to be actually doing a a conference with the Homeland Security investigations on the media and the interactions between the two. So I'm looking forward to doing that. We will have an episode of Sundays with Subscribers this week, and then we'll be off for the holiday. Nicole, I did an impromptu YouTube poll asking if I should give you the day off tomorrow, and 88% of people said yes.
Wait, who said no? Rude.
12% of people said no. However, I will be overruling them because I have things for you to do tomorrow. But you do get Monday off. How does that sound?
Never.
We're working on Monday. Now I got that attitude from Nicole. We're working. Also, can I make a plug for the merch store really quick? Yeah, look at that new pick. Daryl, looking nice in the hat there. We've got 25% off everything in our merch store using the promo code SANITY24. Just go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And while you're there, please sign up to support our mission and our movement to give common sense a comeback. It's just $5 a month. We will see subscribers on Sunday, and we will see the rest of you on the live show coming up on Tuesday.